Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Matt, how would you grade the Monday Night Raw in-ring wrestling match debut for Ronda Rousey? In terms of how WWE set it up and how all four women involved executed the main event segment tonight?
Wade, I'm going to have to give it a strong A. Maybe not an A+, but definitely an A. I don't want to oversell it, but this was an important moment for Ronda Rousey, an important moment for WWE. I think it was really great.
Yeah, I thought there's still something about Rousey where when you watch her, she's not quite on the same, doesn't quite go to the beat of the same drummer as everybody else in her work, but it gives her an edge, not a clumsiness. Like, it gives her a sense of that something ominous can happen. The announcer reactions to her judo throws, the way that they don't always land where they're supposed to, the opponent doesn't always land where they're supposed to, adds that little touch of realism that things are, you know, I don't think people need wrestling to seem real to enjoy it, but I don't think they want to be reminded that it's not, because I think that takes away from it. But with Rousey, there is something that feels authentic about what she's doing, especially, obviously, those judo throws. What did you think of Fox as a foil? Alicia Fox is quirky. They have amplified that over the last couple years with her character. At one point, Corey Graves just said, I don't know if this is psychological warfare or psychological issues that Alicia Fox has. I thought it was a really perfect opponent to put Rousey against, because, I mean, nobody believes Alicia Fox is a serious threat, but it gave Rousey exactly what she needed, which was a win over somebody right in front of Alexa. So I thought Fox was a great opponent for her.
I think Fox is the perfect opponent because she's the one who's going to be damaged least by losing in that manner. You know, as far as her being a foil, I think she's fine. Her on the mic can be a little rough sometimes, but, you know, I think so many different of the women could play that role better, but, you know, including Mickie James. But I thought she was a perfect foil because she is damaged the least.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a really cool moment and a nice touch when Ronda Rousey just stared down Alexa Bliss and paused that extra 3/4 of a second before dropping Fox down into that armbar and cinching it on. I think they've done a great job. And I didn't know where this was going to go with Ronda. I was surprised at how well things went at WrestleMania. There were a couple moments where I thought Rousey's so green and so awkward and not really a natural in the WWE environment when it comes to acting. And that lasted about 1 week. And then she just kind of got on a track where you got to watch her. She seems authentic. And I think, and we'll get into Roman Reigns on the show, of course, because this is a huge month for Roman Reigns' career. I think fans sense an authenticity with Ronda Rousey that they're still waiting to sense. They hear Roman say the words, my family's business. I don't like Lesnar not showing up. But with Rousey, I think it feels less orchestrated. And just there's an authenticity to her love of what she's doing. And I think it's infectious.
And, you know, I think the word authenticity is important because you talk about the credibility of her offense. But and you're talking about authenticity as far as being authentic to the audience so that someone can connect with them. But I saw the authenticity of the X factor, the star power, all those things that they've been waiting for. You know, Ronda's been getting by really just on pure talent and hasn't really tapped into that star power, that X factor, the thing that's going to help them with their billion-dollar deal and help them with the women's revolution. I was pleasantly surprised, although I predicted it could have happened with her performances in the past, but this is the first time she tapped in emotionally. She really had the fans in the palm of her hand.
Absolutely. So, thumbs up. I'm with you. Big thumbs up to the closing segment on Raw. We're going to get into the rest of the happenings. Paul Heyman's remarkable sit-down promo, the latest with Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, SummerSlam's lineup, the B-Team, all kinds of fun stuff, the new B-Team entrance theme. So we got a lot to talk about on today's program. Let's set the table. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, immediately following the Monday, August 6, 2018 edition of WWE Monday Night Raw, which was live in Jacksonville, Florida. Jacksonville, it's a good thing you have an NFL team, because I don't think they would have mentioned you if you didn't. But they did. They put a banner on the screen. Michael Cole mentioned you. Elias mentioned you. You are in the club. You're cosmopolitan enough for the snobs at WWE who won't mention certain cities like Ontario, California, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So we're keeping track of that. Jacksonville, you are in the club of the cool kids, the cool cities. I'm joined on today's program by Matt Kuhn, who is the co-host of a number of wrestling podcasts. We will get into plugging all of them and let you know why you should be subscribing to them in just a moment. But Matt, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It is always a pleasure to be on with you. I love talking wrestling with you, and I like hearing your viewpoint, and I like being able to express it. So thank you so much.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I want to let people know that this show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, will be on tomorrow night also, live streaming after SmackDown, within about 5 minutes of SmackDown. So join us not only after Raw, but after SmackDown each week at WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's where you can go to stream the show live for the caller portion of the program. The full post-produced show with our on-site correspondent, the mailbag, all that stuff is available for download. Just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts. We are available on the Blog Talk Radio homepage, Podbean, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Podbay FM, Spotify. Check us out wherever you listen to podcasts and spread the word. And if you have a moment, in Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or anywhere else that they have ratings for podcasts, such as Stitcher and I believe Google Podcasts, please take time to give us a 5-star rating if you enjoy the program and perhaps leave a review of what it is about this show that you like. Matt, let's get back into the conversation. I do want to let people know you're invited to participate in the show with us. Got a ton of people on hold, only a few people holding to be on the show. So if you want to join the conversation, this is a good time to do it. Just push 1 on your keypad on your phone to indicate to us you want to join the conversation. The number to call if you're streaming us on the web and haven't called in yet is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We will get to calls right after this.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Hey, Matt, let's get the calls. Let's see what the listeners have to say.
All right.
Cool. Let's begin with area code 267. You are up first. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Joe from Philly.
Joe, good to hear from you. What did you think of Raw tonight?
Raw was a decent show. It could have been worse, but it was a decent show. I had a comment on the Ziggler-McIntyre handicap match with Rollins.
Sure, yeah, go ahead. Floor is yours.
So, towards the end of the match, there was some kind of chaos on commentary talking about how, you know, Ziggler didn't make the legal tag, and, you know, it looked as if that, you know, there was some controversy. And, I mean, if you were watching Raw, I mean, especially as a commentator, I mean, I know they have to read so many lines at the desk, they're probably not looking up sometimes and whatever, but if you were watching Raw, you clearly seen Dolph Ziggler make that tag. I mean, it was clear that he went over to the apron, he made the tag. They had the whole roll-up thing where McIntyre interfered. He hit the super kick. He pinned him. And Cole was, like, so dumbfounded. I mean, he was like, I don't know, some controversy. I don't know if Ziggler made the tag. And I thought, like, maybe Corey would butt in or, you know, like, it was like they didn't even notice what was happening in the match. They're just too busy, you know, over there just chatting away, you know, picking on Coach, doing this and that, not even paying attention to what's going on in the match. And as a viewer, it's so frustrating you know, sitting there listening and talk about something that didn't even happen. I'm sorry, Wade.
That's okay. Let me jump in because I got what you're saying. I want to get Matt's point of view on this too. First of all, if you're picking on Coach, I don't care if you missed the finish of the match. But that said, I get your point, Joe. I didn't go back and review it. So I didn't make as much out of it as you did. I think that it's important for the announcers to know who was tagged in. I did not rewind to see if they were right or wrong. But I guess I'd have to review the tape to find out why Cole even drew attention to why Cole even decided to draw that much attention to it, and why it did become a bit of a distraction at the point of the finish of the match. Sometimes I think announcers, and I pick up on this, and I don't think it's all every time I sense it, I don't think it's necessarily happening, but I think sometimes it is. I think sometimes there's a sense of just exasperation that maybe there was too much talking in a headset, or that they were told one thing was going to happen and something else happened, or, you know, like, and it's just, it happens to everybody. We're humans. That you there's a little expression of frustration that maybe comes out in a different way. Matt, did you pick up on that, and did you have any reaction to it?
Yeah, it's kind of a thing where it's kind of unlike Michael Cole to throw a crowbar into the flow of the ending of a match like that. And it's hard for me to criticize the announcer sometimes because I know how hard their job is. But I thought that was – it was weird. It was a weird moment. I think there might be a story behind that.
Okay. So maybe there's – you think there's a story behind it and that it was intentional – and we should read into it, or there's just something behind the scenes that was a story about
it. It could be a changed finish, and Michael Cole wasn't sure of that, or it could be a million things, but it just seems very unlike Michael Cole to do that. I mean, sure. Byron Saxton could do it, but, you know, it seems unlike him to do that.
Fair enough, yeah. Joe, do you have anything else you want to add about Raw?
Yeah, I was just going to comment real quick on that, and I just wanted to say that I actually did. I mean, I went back. I mean, I literally rewinded back. And I mean, it's like you said, it's not that big of a thing, and I understand that I am making a little bit more big of a deal than usual, but it's just the fact that, like, nobody, like you said, it could have been a change, whatever, but, like clearly, really, if you go back and review it, Wade, you'll see he Ziggler clearly gets on the apron. He puts his hand out, like, Ziggler, like, he's so, like, you know what I mean? He's so, like, I can't really think of a word for it, but, like, he's so, like colorful in the way, like, you know, he, like, puts his hand out like he's, like, in a cartoon. You know what I'm saying? McIntyre slapped it. He got in the ring. They had a little exchange. Went to that roll-up. Rollins rebounded into McIntyre. He went back into Ziggler, super kick pin. And then, like, it was, like, it would have been fine if they were just, like, oh, this was in controversy, whatever. But the fact that even Cole asked Corey, I mean, he went to Corey and he was like, Corey, did you see anything with the legal man? And even Corey had no comment on it. Corey was the same way with, like, oh, well, this is a match in controversy. And it's like, as a viewer, it's a little frustrating. Like, you know, you're trying to be invested in Raw. And when your lead commentator, who's Michael Cole, who's, I mean, he's such a professional. Listen, Michael Cole is a great commentator.
I got you. No, that's okay. It's a good point. I just want to move on from it so we can get to other stuff.
I'm sorry.
that's okay. I appreciate you calling about it. I agree with you. And I think that it's a good springboard for a question for Matt, too, about the announcing. Matt, during the Roman Reigns match, I just felt like the match was a backdrop for this propaganda session to put over Roman Reigns. Like, it felt so heavy-handed to me. Like, and I know I won't say desperate, but it felt heavy-handed. Like, everything all three announcers were saying was so clearly this strong-arming by Vince McMahon to try to get everybody. And, I mean, the last few weeks of TV especially has been doing everything Vince McMahon can do to get that pop in Brooklyn at SummerSlam, to get the fans hating Lesnar and appreciating Reigns. And, like, Corey Graves, I think it was Corey, said that Reigns has earned every title shot he's gotten. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, one of them, it's just like, no, he hasn't. And I know some people are venting on Twitter about it too. Did that come across to you as not just to us, but maybe to the average viewer going, wait a second, just let us watch and decide, quit telling us how to feel about this whole situation?
You know, I'm almost mute to it now. I'm almost immune to it now because this is the maybe fourth or fifth time they've taken such a strong-handed approach to it. You know, this isn't the first time we've been down this road. It's like, okay, we're going to get people to cheer for him for this pay-per-view, you know? So I didn't know. I mean, honestly, I've heard it before and I'm so used to it. I will say that it was a very uncompelling video package to make the case for Roman Reigns to get that title shot. And, you know, he's not being helped by whatever the booking and the storyline was leading up to this, with maybe short-term booking through the Greatest Royal Rumble and last-second changes at WrestleMania, he hasn't been helped. I know we like to pick on him, but he hasn't been helped by the way he's been set up for this match.
Yeah. All right. Joel, appreciate the call. And let's go now to 323. 323, you're up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, how you guys doing? This is Harry from Las Vegas.
Hey, Harry.
Staying with the Roman... Sorry, guys. Staying with the Roman theme, I think that they usually shove him down our throat, but today I think it was just too much. I mean, opening segment and then a two-segment match, backstage with Seth.
Yeah.
Backstage when he was told that he couldn't tag with Seth, then the promo on the package with Corey. And I mean, that was like six segments. And after the first three, I was like, all right, I'm starting to dig this guy. But at the end of the day, I'm like, damn, that's too much. They overdid it. Do you guys think that this can end up like killing whichever momentum they could have had at the beginning of the show, how they ended with it?
Well, Harry, let me ask you this, because this is a service to Vince McMahon. Would they have been, if they just dial it down 60%, could they have gotten you to kind of buy into the storyline and not resent the strong arming of Roman?
They had me at the beginning. I mean, I liked the promo, even though it was too scripted. The first segment, I liked it. They went to the match. Great guy to go against with Baron Corbin, being a guy that nobody likes. He got the win. Okay, I'm good. But then we think that they're going to have another match. It's like, oh, my God, we already saw this guy in three segments. Now another match. Okay, it's him and Seth. And then he's not going to have a match. It's like, great, we're not going to see him wrestle. And then we got to take five more minutes of him talking, and it's like overkill. It's like, I'm done. I'm going to boo him at SummerSlam.
All right. Hey, I got to ask. Usually I just ignore it. But what's the noise in the background? My imagination's running wild.
Oh, my air conditioner in my car.
Oh, wow. It sounds like...
Don't worry, I'm on my hands for here. I'll kill it right there.
All right, we're good. Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it. All right.
No, thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it was good timing. I didn't know he was on hold to rant about Roman when I asked about the announcers. But it was an episode heavy on Roman's Reigns hype, and it should be. He's challenging for the Universal Championship. Matt, how do you grade them, Vince McMahon in particular, on striking the right tone? I mean, you've got to give them an A for effort, because A++ for effort.
For sure.
I mean,
right.
They are. They're all in on getting Roman over. I mean, mixed feeling. First of all, well, go ahead. I'll throw it to you. I got things to say. But I want, you know, they're all in. Is it working? Is it obviously not working? Is it going to work on just enough people for Vince to consider it worth the effort?
There's, I think Brock and Paul Heyman are doing a great job of creating that heel space. And I think Roman has the opportunity through them and how well they're doing. But at the same time, I got to give him a D if you're asking me for a grade, because it's like the listener who called and said, I think less is more when it comes to Roman. I think if you have Roman in every segment, and this is bad, but it plays to his strengths. If you have him in every segment, it's never going to be great. But if you have him like Sting up in the rafters, you know, just making an appearance every other show, he would be 10 times as popular. And I think that just goes to show how he's put in bad situations quite often where he can't succeed.
What is Roman's culpability in how some people, many people, not everybody, is reacting to him in terms of the negativity? Where do you put Roman in terms of like, is it he's being overpushed, but he's doing his part? Or no, I mean, they're overpushing him, because if they only let him do his part, that wouldn't be enough.
I don't think we hear a whole lot of Roman can't take direction or Roman's not doing what we want him to. So I really hold his culpability kind of low, because he's going back there after those just terrible promos and those really disconnected moments, and people are giving him high fives and telling me he did a good job. You know, yeah. So I can't really. It's a lot like faulting a lot of the wrestlers we talk about. And how could you have done this? How could you have done that? Well, it was my job. And you know, Roman is, I don't think we've ever heard anything like Roman is not following directions on how to connect more, or he's doing terrible in his promos. I think they're happy with the job he's doing. So I hold his culpability probably lower than you would.
Yeah. And I like, there was a point in the promo early in the show, at the top of the show, where the scripting was just so bad. Like, he was jumping to conclusions based on things that were being said that didn't make any sense. And, like, I just think the material Roman is getting is bad. So I want to, like, not always, but a lot of the time. And that tonight, the mic work that he was given was real bad. Like, there was a point where Kurt Angle said, nobody likes what Brock Lesnar did last week from the top on down. I'm like, oh, okay. So Angle saying even Stephanie thought Lesnar went too far. Okay, that's fine. And then Reigns was scripted to suddenly say, well, you're not saying that you're going to suspend Brock Lesnar and try to postpone the match at SummerSlam, are you? It's like, who would come up with that based off of Stephanie saying she doesn't like, or implying Stephanie says she didn't like what was happening. Like, and I, so the material was bad, but I didn't think Roman delivered it well either. And here's the thing with Roman, and you're right. He's, you know, no one's telling him he's not difficult to work with. No one's critiquing him all that much, but I sort of feel like Roman must think he's better than he is, or he must be checked out and not care because the checks are big enough. Cause that's material that every other top guy would have looked at on a script and said, no, I can't say that. Why would I say that in response to that? That makes no sense.
Whenever I want to criticize Roman Reigns, the performer, or Roman Reigns, the person doing his job, I think of one moment, Wade, and something you brought attention to a while ago, and it was he was on top of a ladder at the end of a match with, I believe, the League of Nations. And you brought attention to the fact that the camera stayed on him too long, and he was trying so hard, and then his face just relaxed in this desperate, sad face.
Yes, you
know, and that's what I think of Roman. I think of him as someone who really is trying and really performing the duties of his job as he's being told to do. And even when he has something like today, he might think he's better than he is, but I think he's being supported in that endeavor. It is a terrible push. It's been a terrible process. Roman being where he's been has been damaging to the company. There's no doubt about it. But is it Roman's fault? No, it's Vince's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm more on the side of there's fault to go around in many places. But being this heavy handed, I don't think it's working. Jacksonville is a babyface friendly crowd tonight. And I think he got a better reaction than he does in most cities. I think Brooklyn still is going to be pretty brutal.
I've been in that Brooklyn building, when Roman has come out for SummerSlam, and it is one of the loudest boos you'll ever hear.
Yeah. And what does it say? What does it tell Vince McMahon, and should he be embarrassed, or should he just, you know, shrug his shoulders and go, hey, we gave it a try? Or should he be excited? Hey, it's polarizing, but it's intense. Like, how does he respond if that is the case? If all of this effort, you know, just demeaning Brock Lesnar as an attraction, saying he doesn't want to be there, all the resources of TV time going into trying to tell this story that Roman is for you guys, the universe, and Lesnar's not. So, you know, no matter what, how you might feel about him, he represents you and us and the family. If it doesn't work at all, I mean, how do you think Vince responds to that? Denial, rationalization, justification? What is it?
It's a two sides of the same coin that seem to contradict each other. Number one, you have this whole narrative that if Roman's the guy, if Roman gets the reactions, like Jimmy Jacobs told me, if he's the top guy and he gets the reactions, we don't care about good guy or bad guy. But the other side is what you're saying. They're doing everything they can to get people to cheer him. And I'd like to think that deep down in Vince McMahon's heart, he obviously knows there's a problem, or else they wouldn't be pushing him so hard. They would just cart him out there like John Cena, and he would get the cheers. So I guess I'm saying Vince has to know.
Yeah, so somebody misunderstood me once, too, when the Jimmy Jacobs story, and I always said, I don't believe it. And what I mean by that is I don't believe that Vince McMahon doesn't want heels and baby faces. I think that he sells the company, the underlings, the staff on the idea when he fails that to get a baby face and heel over, or he kind of loses his way because he gets distracted by something else, that it's okay. You know, that's part of the plan, that it's sports entertainment, and we just want a reaction. As long as there's a reaction, that's all that counts. And I've heard that so much, and I first of all, I don't believe it's a good philosophy, and second of all, I sincerely don't believe Vince McMahon really believes that. I think it's just what he has to say because of John Cena. It's what he has to say because of Roman Reigns. And so he says it because he doesn't want to look like he's failing in his mission. And then I think people sort of buy it who should know better, because, of course, getting a reaction that's so the opposite of the entire narrative force that you're putting out there through your announcing, your videos, the clip from last night's house show of raising the fan's hand who had Down syndrome and welcoming him into the Shield. Everything in terms of the corporate framing of Roman Reigns is love this guy. You need to love this guy. He's a hero. He's a great guy. He stands for everything that you should cheer. And they still reject him. So, of course, Vince can't go, God, we picked the wrong guy, or Roman sucks, or I'm bad at my job. He's going to go, hey, any reaction's a good reaction. I don't buy it for a second that he's at peace with that, because he wouldn't be trying so freaking hard on shows like this to get a cheer. He'd just be talking about polarization instead of this whole narrative trying to get people to feel guilty if they don't cheer Roman Reigns.
Well, you know, one thing Vince doesn't do is Vince doesn't sell. You know, he doesn't sell in real life. You know, he doesn't show when he's got failure. So, you know, he's not going to sell that no matter how true it is. And of course it's true, because why would they be going through all this? Why would Brock Lesnar be attacking Paul Heyman if not to make Roman Reigns more popular? It doesn't. That's the only solution.
Yeah. Yep. Before I go to the next call, just a reminder that you can make this show ad-free with the plugs and ads removed by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. So much more comes with a VIP membership than just the 4 Wade Keller post shows and podcasts throughout the week going ad-free. All the PW Torch livecasts that drop throughout the week, 7 new shows per week, those are ad and plug-free. Plus, I do the Wade Keller hotline for VIP members every single day. On Sunday, it was kind of a different hotline than usual. I went back 20 years to the back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and talked about them for like 25 minutes. Just pulled out some of the top stories of the week with Jay Leno at Road Wild, the hype for SummerSlam, but also smaller tidbits, behind-the-scenes reactions to among wrestlers to the Brawl for All, including the locker room reaction when Bart Gunn knocked out Steve Dr. Death Williams. And some other fascinating tidbits that we had in our Newswire section 20 years ago on that Brawl for All, whatever that – it wasn't an era, the experiment, I guess, the Brawl for All experiment. Also, Shane McMahon, just a couple weeks into commentary on Sunday Night Heat, I had some strong comments, editorial comments about that. So much more. It's really cool just doing a 20 years ago look back. The Wade Keller Hotline, I do a variety of different formats, but it's every day for about – 9 years now. Not a day off. Every single day. Whether it's reviewing Raw and SmackDown start to finish, reviewing NXT TakeOver, NXT's weekly TV show, which I do in the lead up to TakeOvers, or whether it's breaking down the news of the day and analyzing it, making sense of it, or answering mailbag questions that are sent to the Wade Keller Hotline. That's another feature. Plus, The Fix with Todd Martin and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host those throughout the week, along with post-pay-per-view roundtables. There's more than you'll probably take advantage of just in terms of daily content, but that's the way we like it. We want to give you lots of choices. It's like Netflix. You're not going to watch everything that's available on Netflix, but there's such a wide selection. You're going to get more than your money's worth, and we hope you'll give it a try. Not only that, you get 30-plus years of archives of podcasts and retro radio shows dating back to the early 1990s, and you also get ad-free access to our website, and over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. It's a great deal. Check it out if you haven't yet. VIP membership is 2 minutes away. It's a mobile-friendly sign-up process. Just go to pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Hey, if nothing else, you go VIP. You can subscribe to our podcast feed that's just for VIP members. And what I just did here, this plug for the VIP site, and the VIP membership goes away. It's edited off the version VIP members get. They get early access to interviews, so many other perks. Go check out details. PWTorchVIPinfo.com.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube. NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
All right, let's go to 662 next. 662, thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Logan from Mississippi.
Thanks, Logan. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
I had just a couple comments. My big thing first was when you talked about Ronda and the way that she does her moves in an aggressive way, that's it's very different. And there's only one problem I have with that. It's like coming from a guy who has put, like, I've worked before and put my life in somebody else's hands. It's just a little scary watching. Yeah. You know, it gives you a bit of like a
jolt.
Like, it makes me cringe. Like when she gave Alicia Fox that judo throw and she landed in the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, it's a little.
So is
it's
this
a little scary to watch her do something?
Logan, like is it good scary or bad scary?
I'm not sure. I think that's the biggest issue I have with watching. You know, like I'm just not sure yet if I'm buying that it just makes her look meaner, if it just makes her look greener. You know?
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it's a little bit. I think it is genuinely a little bit of both, and it's why they keep her protected. In you know, matches like this where it's just one distraction after another, there's not a lot of chain wrestling. I think if she was like, I think Dennis Rodman was more of a natural, and that's not a dig at all. I mean, Dennis Rodman was just like, he took to it, and even though there's still an awkwardness to anybody who's comes from outside from another sport into wrestling and doesn't spend years honing their craft because their star power shoots them into the ring early. There's always going to be an awkwardness. I mean, it makes you appreciate how good wrestlers are to make this stuff look smooth. But with Ronda, because of her background in judo, the judo throws having that extra oomph and snap just feels sort of credible and not awkward or dangerous in a bad way. Go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say first of all, with Ronda, I was going to make that Dennis Rodman correlation too. She reminds me a little bit of Rodman, you know, the way that she would, the way that he would do those rolling elbows and, you know, in that little bit of out of control. But Ronda is a athlete who's used to this, you know, who's used to sparring. But the main thing is we've never had someone like Ronda in wrestling before. We've had Scott Steiners. We've had Rick Steiners, we've had people, you know, Taz's and people that could throw people around and really had some real technique, a Kurt Angle. You know, we haven't had any kind of person who looks like this before as far as maybe taking the moves a little bit beyond the safe zone, but at the same time having a powerful and compelling career in the ring.
Yes. Yep. All right. Anything else? I was trying to think if I had anything else to say.
Yeah, just one more thing. I mean, let's just be completely honest. Who is the best actor or character in all of WWE? And it's Paul Heyman. It was.
Yeah.
I mean, from the get-go, from the opening and, like, the camera getting on his face, and you immediately see his eyes are red. He's already there. He's already, like, just set. There's no cracks in who he is and what he does, and I sat back and I watched it, and I just appreciated every second of it. The intensity that he puts in it and the work that he does, I just appreciated it. So I appreciate Paul Heyman for what he is and what he does, for sure.
Logan, thank you. Yeah, Heyman was phenomenal. I mean, I commented on PWTorch.com on my Raw report. They shouldn't put Heyman on TV anymore because it's so good. It just makes everything else look so bad by comparison. I mean, it's like, yeah, it feels so off. I mean, it could have been maudlin. It could have been over the top. It could have been too much and sappy. And it's just Heyman's gifted. He's too good for even that level of performance. Where he went is so far down a road that nobody else would even dare to go, and certainly would not have done successfully. And so, yeah, it was almost too good. Now I'm still suspicious. He's going to come out, and he and Lesnar are going to share a hearty laugh. I mean, at this, but it's also possible it's the end of Lesnar, and Heyman will move on to manage somebody else. Matt, your take on that segment?
Well, I think we had a really great glimpse into the guy who's been able to pull off all the crazy stuff Paul Heyman has in his life. You know, like that kind of emotion, being able to tap into that, is the Paul Heyman that we hear about convincing these ECW wrestlers to work the way they did and to motivate people and to get people on his side and to be able to get into these crazy jobs he's been able to get into. You know, we had a great glimpse of that. He's able to tap into himself in a real way. And it was extremely compelling. And, other people should learn from that. Instead of keeping off TV, they should look at that performance and say, how can I get to that point? You know, I can't think of too many other people in wrestling history have been able to do what Paul Heyman did tonight.
Yeah, it was great. We'll probably talk more about it later in the show here. Let's go to 323 next. 323, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, how's it going? JD from Los Angeles. How are you doing, Wade?
Doing good, JD. Almost forgot where you were from. I always like when that happens. I'm JD from... I always give people a hard time about that. All right, so what'd you think of Raw?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, the thing that... Well, obviously, Heyman stood out. I mean, the guy's just a magician. It's kind of weird to imagine him without Brock, but, you know, what stands out to me week in and week out is Seth Rollins every single time. The guy... just I feel like he gets it done no matter what, and I truly, and I know you've echoed this, Wade, and I think others have as well, but you say it a lot, and I feel like you're echoing what I really think. It's such a shame that Rollins isn't the one entrenched in this Brock Lesnar storyline instead of Roman Reigns, because Seth Rollins, I felt, was already planting the seeds during his IC title run, making hints at Brock Lesnar not being a great champion. And I feel like the most important thing that you said was Seth Rollins beating Brock Lesnar, the curb stomp heard around the world, would have been a superstar-making moment for Seth Rollins and another guy for Vince McMahon to truly rely on and lean on. And I just don't know why they don't push it. And I wanted to know what you think after Raw, after everything you're seeing with Rollins, what do you see as the future for Seth Rollins heading to WrestleMania?
Thanks, Shady. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll go down depending on how things go with Roman. But if things don't go well with Roman and Brock, if the crowd boos him, if he sort of has a title reign after presumably beating Lesnar at SummerSlam that resembles Sting's after he beat Ric Flair, where it's like, the opponents just aren't there. We thought the crowd would be there, but the magic just isn't there. And if that's the case, it's going to be seen as a huge lost opportunity, a blown opportunity to make a star by having Seth triumphantly beat Lesnar with universal positive reaction in the Brooklyn crowd. Matt, they're missing an opportunity. And pushing Roman isn't just, well, we gave it our best shot. It's not like, well, no harm done, we tried. It's like no harm was done because of the opportunity cost of not having Seth be promoted at this year's SummerSlam to be the guy who ends Brock Lesnar.
You know, as far as how I feel about Seth Rollins overall and his positioning, I see him as Randy Savage, not Hulk Hogan. That's me. I think he's a better choice than Roman. And right now he seems to be hitting on all cylinders. I don't think, you know, for me, he doesn't have that X factor to really be that guy. But there's no denying his popularity right now. There's no denying he's putting his matches together well right now and just sequencing things in a way that makes the crowd happy. And his character off screen is fine, or off out of the ring is fine. But I would agree that at this moment in time, for the future of the company, it would be better to have Seth Rollins in there.
I think what you're saying about Savage and Hogan is how Vince sees them. You know, and I think it is what is keeping Seth from being chosen to be the guy. But I also agree with you that it is a better choice for Seth based on all the signs regarding Roman. And I've been up and down on Seth, but I listen to that crowd reaction, and I just don't think there's this big drop-off. I don't think that he only works as a number two star. He only works if he's not in the main event in the top position. I could be wrong. You don't know for sure till they get that spot. I don't think Seth is the greatest option that they've ever had that they've passed on. But the crowd, and again, maybe part of the crowd response for Seth isn't just pro Seth, but it's anti-Roman. It's anti-Roman's push. It's anti-corporate WWE.
Right.
And that's such a big vocal part of the fan base wants to feel like we get to choose Vince. We get to choose. And we want Seth more than Roman, and that manifests in Seth actually being more over than he would be if Roman weren't being pushed so hard. Again, those are things we just don't know, but it's an interesting conversation to have.
And I think the interesting thing is the timing, you know, and Vince is usually better about stuff like this, but right now would be the time to find out. Ride that wave, ride that momentum, because this guy's peaking right now. Like I said, I don't see him as Hogan, I see him as Savage, but Savage had his moment too, and right now is that groundswell is building for the guy, and it might be a wasted opportunity to find out.
Agreed. All right, appreciate the call, JD. We got to cut away here and go to our on-site correspondent who was in Jacksonville. We'll break the good news to him that indeed WWE mentioned their city, his city. So we'll get to that right after this, and we'll also answer email questions. If we didn't get to your call, please email WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com, and we will address your question on the other side of our on-site correspondent conversation. All right, we're now joined by our on-site correspondent, Chris, who went to Raw in Jacksonville, Florida tonight. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me, Wade.
Excellent. Well, first things first, tell us about the crowd reaction to Roman Reigns throughout the night. How would you characterize their buying into what WWE was selling to them, which is babyface Roman Reigns challenging Brock Lesnar, who is the least appreciative wrestler of all time, who doesn't even want to be champion other than for the ego of it?
Well, first of all, let me tell you that I've always been a Roman Reigns fan. I'm from the Pensacola area, born and raised there. So having a local kid sort of be successful in life always is good for, you know, just for our area and town. So I've always been a Roman Reigns fan. But tonight, I was actually pretty surprised. It was pretty favorable towards Roman. I would say that the most thing that got booed was his stupid thing that he does before the Superman punch. That's yeah. The thing that gets booed the most. It's ridiculous, and I hate it. But and when his during the match with Baron Corbin was very much over, very much cheering Roman Reigns, I'd say it's about 65-35.
And it came across on TV as it was a good crowd for Roman. Did you sense that they were more into Roman because of the story that WWE was telling and the way that he was being presented, or it's just what the crowd would do? They're kind of going for the baby faces, and they're playing along with Roman being slotted. They're eating what they're being fed, so to speak.
I would say it's probably a little bit of both, to be honest with you. During, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but during the Paul Heyman interview, that was just it was pretty much not very successful in the building. It was quiet, and they booed him. They asked him if he wanted I heard somebody ask if he wanted tissues in the crowd, and I just get the feeling that what's been going on with Roman Reigns is working to an extent. Now, it's SummerSlam, it's New York City, so I don't know how successful they're going to be, but for what they're trying to do, I think it's working.
Matt, do you want to jump in?
Well, for me, I think I've been to those New York shows, and I think everything gets erased once they get up there. And Roman gets booed, and Brock gets cheered. But just to ask the person who's at the live event, our caller, what was the entire show like? It seemed like, as far as a Raw overall goes, sitting in the audience, it probably was a pretty entertaining show because you had good stuff kind of at the beginning and at the end. And it seemed like it was a good show.
You know, you're right, Matt. It was a really entertaining show. I think people in the building, I don't know if they announced it on the air to where they made it known that Ronda Rousey was going to be the main event. We didn't know that. We kind of saw it. I sensed at least that I thought the Dolph Ziggler tag team match was going to end up being the main event. And when they came out at, I think, the 10 o'clock hour, we got a little bit more excited that Ronda Rousey was going to be the main event. And it was, but yeah, overall it was from top to bottom, except for a little bit there with the interview. And it was a pretty great show for at least in the live experience part of it.
How would you rank the reaction of the top baby faces on the show? Where does Roman rank compared to Ronda, Seth, Lashley, on and on?
Okay, it's Braun Strowman. Seth Rollins is number one. Kurt Angle got a big pop at the beginning. I would say Seth Rollins, Kurt Angle, if you count him in there, and then Braun Strowman. I'd put Roman up there with probably fourth or fifth.
Okay.
And I'd consider that a success for Roman, really. So
No, for sure. I mean, given the reaction he gets in some towns, that is encouraging. So
Ronda wasn't even in the top five for you?
Oh no, I completely forgot about Ronda.
Good catch, Matt. Yeah.
Ronda Rousey is right up there with Seth Rollins. You can put 1A and 1B.
Nice.
All right, good. How did Kurt Angle do when he came out?
Kurt Angle was good. I really liked what they've been doing. Like, he's at least having somewhat of a backbone, except when he gets on the imaginary phone and talks to somebody that's nobody on the other line.
Yeah.
But, you know, except when he talks to Stephanie McMahon, he's actually have a backbone lately, which is nice. But, I mean, in the arena, he's great. You know, he gets a great reaction. And the "you suck" chant, which everybody loves to do with him. But he's great in the arena, and he's been doing a lot better lately. He's been booking him a lot better lately with the at least somewhat of a backbone.
Yeah, yeah. So you talked about the Heyman segment not working on the video wall. Was there anything else that took the crowd out of it? I know the going to commercial break, you know, savvy fans can kind of pick up on when they're at a commercial because then the wrestlers often go to the mat hold. And it sort of lets the fans know, we're not here for you. We're here for the TV audience. We're going to kind of hang out in the middle of the ring here and rest while we're at commercial. So I've heard from on-site correspondents, sometimes that takes people out of the crowd. What was it like in the building for this episode of Raw for you as a fan in the building? How much did it work for the crowd, and were there times you felt that you weren't being served?
The most time was, and I'm forgetting the order, but first off, that Paul Heyman interview seemed a lot longer than it should have been, or at least for me in the arena. And it was like we're starting to get restless a little bit, but there was, even before that and even after that, there wasn't much action inside the actual arena. It was commercials, somebody would come out, maybe go to another commercial. It felt like half an hour.
Wow.
That there wasn't much going on. I'm sure it was probably only 10 or 15 or maybe, probably 10 or 15 minutes at the most. But for me in the arena, I was even thinking about this because I knew you were going to ask that. And I was like, it feels like half an hour. I'm not timing it on my phone, but I'm just feeling like it's a lot longer than it should be.
Well, when it came to Elias, and actually just kind of the heels in general, the heels who are out to entertain the audience, like Elias and Kevin Owens jumped to mind in particular, maybe Alexa Bliss and her promo would be in that category. Who stood out the most as the crowd being invested and engaged in what they were doing?
Okay, Now, I'm going to ask a question. Did you guys on TV get the Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre promo?
No. Matt, I don't think so, okay. Right?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I didn't think so because he cut a promo mentioning, first of all, he mentioned the city, which usually if they do that, it's a signal to me that they're not actually in the building.
Oh, sure.
Or that's not live on television. And then he said wrestling. They're talking about being respected and that they were the best thing to ever happen to the city of Jacksonville and the best thing to ever happen to wrestling. And they said wrestling. And I said, okay, this is probably a not TV promo. But that was one of the big things I was wondering. So yeah, that didn't make on TV.
Yep. Yep. All right, let's cut away for a quick break. When we come back, more with our on-site correspondent, Chris from Jacksonville, Florida. Matt, do you have anything else you want to ask our correspondent, Chris?
How did the as far as the anticipation that build for, it seemed to me that the tag team match with Seth Rollins and the Mystery Partner kind of built and was anticlimactic. Was that disappointing to you guys in the audience that he wouldn't have a Mystery Partner, or disappointed it was Roman, or disappointed it was a handicap match? How did that play out live?
It was very disappointing that it wasn't Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
I don't know how big the reaction was.
Chris, okay. let me ask you this, because we were told on TV it would not be Dean. Were you told it would not be Dean ahead of time?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, see,
no.
They should have announced that to the crowd during commercial two or something.
Because I don't know how big the crowd was, but the "We Want Ambrose" chant was loud in the arena.
Wow.
Yeah, I definitely heard it.
Yeah.
And so everybody assumed, even when they announced the partner, everybody in the arena assumed it was Dean Ambrose. And then when they saw Roman Reigns, it got a cheer. But, and then especially when he was taken out of the match, that everybody, you know, assumed it was Dean Ambrose. We were never told that on anything that Dean Ambrose wasn't there or anything like that.
Interesting, interesting. Well, I felt the finish of the match when Seth got pinned was pretty flat. Like, I didn't think the crowd expected that to be the finish and didn't really react to it. Did you get that sense from being in the building?
Yeah, and I think the reasoning was because everybody was expecting a partner to show up. Sooner or later, everybody was expecting somebody to come out, whether it was Roman or, I don't know, Jason Jordan or Dean Ambrose, at least in the building, we thought it was him, but We expected something to happen to where it wouldn't just be a normal handicap match. So when they finished, I heard somebody was like, oh, that's it. I heard somebody around me say that. And I was like, yep, I guess that's it.
talk about what if there was a dark match advertised and if they delivered on it.
Oh, God, no. No. The dark match that was advertised, at least on the email that I got, which was when it first got tickets went out, was a massive 8-man tag that was like Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and Finn Balor versus Kevin Owens and Jinder Mahal. And I forget the other two people. But that never happened. No. And actually, I'll be honest with you, I was sitting behind, kind of just behind the announcer's table, and about 10:30, I looked to my left and I could see Jinder Mahal just kind of standing there with his phone, looking at his phone, and he was in his jeans. So I was like, well, I guess he's not part of the dark match.
And no announcement to the crowd or anything?
No, there was no announcement. The ending of the show was Ronda Rousey hugging Natalya, and they said, have a nice night. And that was it.
Did you sense any fans were expecting the match that was advertised, or do you think not enough people were thinking about it that anybody really cared by the time they had sat there for 3.5+ hours?
I don't think. Once the match was over, it was a pretty good exit. So yeah. I don't think people were – I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I got the email – and I listened to your podcast enough that I was like, well, if for some reason I do get on this show as an on-site correspondent, that would be the first question that would be asked. And I looked at that main event that was advertised, and I said, there's no way that happens.
Yeah.
I said, that was my first reaction. I said, there's no way.
Well,
but I did expect something. I will say this. I did expect something.
Yeah. And like, the idea that people, after the show is over, don't care, doesn't justify constantly advertising a match knowing that their batting percentage on actually delivering is low. It just feels like there's got to be a better way. I think it's bad for goodwill with fans. I think it's bad for their reputation to advertise matches and just lean on that asterisk card subject to change so heavily. Just list the stars who are going to be there, or don't list a mega eight-man match. Just list a couple innocuous matches that maybe don't happen, but Raw seems better than what was advertised. It just seems like bad business practices and kind of unethical. To just do it constantly like this so often.
Yeah, I really wasn't like, when I went into the buildings thinking, I was like, there's just no way that eight man tag happens. There's just so many things that could happen in the matter of when the email started 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
That something could happen. And then I said, well, maybe I'll get a Jinder Mahal versus Braun Strowman match or something. I don't know. You know, just going into it, I had no idea what match was when I started. But then nothing happened. They just said, have a nice night.
Yeah, I mean, just give the fans a feeling they got to see something people at home didn't. And I think that can help.
Yeah.
Even if fans are sort of ready to go home, and obviously most are, and most aren't even thinking about the email, but to me, you want to give fans a feeling that they got to see something extra, even if it's quick in and out, of a dark main event, because it'll help ticket sales next time you're in town. Hey, I'm just going to stay at home and watch Raw. I didn't get anything all that extra. But if you give them something extra, they feel like they walk away going, all right, we got to see something people across the country and world didn't get to see. So besides just false advertising and the bad ethics of that, I think it would be good for business when they come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about before Raw? Did you get there in time to see what they taped for main event?
Yeah, it was No Way Jose versus Curt Hawkins, and I'll give you one guess of who won that match.
Do we have? Here's the thing. If Curt Hawkins won, I'd be very mad at you for not leading with that when we talked to you at the top of the conversation.
Here's the thing I took away from this was that they advertised he was 0-216. So, like, I'm trying to, like, is this becoming a Goldberg streak random number? Or
totally.
Is this, like, a thing? You know, is he going to be 232 by next week? I don't know. But if he's now 0-217, according to WWE.
I wish there's a place we could go, Matt, and see the actual record of every loss Curt Hawkins has and see if it's legit.
I think it is legit. And I also know that Curt Hawkins would be very upset if he beat No Way Jose personally. You know, Curt Hawkins wants this losing streak to last as long as it can, and so that when it does end, it actually becomes something. And right now, I think he's much happier losing to No Way Jose on main event than he would be beating Curtis Axel on Raw.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's good for Curt Hawkins' business to be a loser. And then was there another match?
It was a six-man tag with the Ascension and Mike Kanellis going against Chad Gable, Heath Slater, and Rhino. And Heath Slater.
We are losing our connection to you, Chris. I don't know if you can still hear us. Maybe you're just going through a spot with bad reception. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm really upset, Wade, because I really wanted to hear how that match turned out.
It is the highlight of our on-site correspondent segment, is getting the Mike Kanellis update, you know?
He hooked us in and then gone.
Yes, well, I'll tell you this. I cheat. I went over to ProWrestling.net because I saw they had a correspondent there. Heath Slater, Rhino, and Chad Gable beat the Ascension and Mike Kanellis. So there you go.
Oh, thank God.
So we got that. Chris, are you back with us? I'm going to lost Chris. Well, I think we got just about everything out of Chris, other than what he paid for his ticket and how full the building was. So maybe we'll end on that note, and we'll fill people in by email on pwtorch.com. Maybe we can fill that in later on. So, Chris, if you can hear us, we can't hear you, but we appreciate you taking time to talk to us. If you want to be an on-site correspondent for a future show, let us know. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Put the date and the city in the subject line. Helps me stay organized and find you and reach out to you. All right, Matt, let's come back and answer some email questions. Hey, Matt, before we move on, let's hear about your podcasts, how people can find them, and what they're all about if people aren't subscribing yet.
Well, I've been on several podcasts. You might know me from Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard or What Happened When with Tony Schiavone. But currently, I'm with Why It Ended with Robbie E., where we interview wrestlers about why it ended. And we've had a lot of great guests on there, and people love the Buff Bagwell Show, the Muhammad Hassan Show. We just interviewed Coco Beware today. And also a weekly Down and Dirty with Dutch Mantel. I co-host with Dutch, and we talk about anything going on, maybe in the past or future or present in professional wrestling. And of course, Survivor NSFW, the unauthorized podcast of Survivor, a non-wrestling podcast with Johnny Fairplay. And I got maybe a couple other things in the works you're going to be hearing about, but I stay pretty busy.
Very cool. So search. What are the best search terms for each of those shows?
For Survivor NSFW, it's Survivor NSFW or Johnny Fairplay without an H. Of course, just search Dutch Mantel or search Why It Ended.
Very good. So check those out. JTG, Tully Blanchard, Francine, Ryback, Jimmy Jacobs. Some fascinating interviews recently with Robbie E. I did not I didn't see it coming, Robbie E. becoming a podcast host, a wrestler interviewing wrestlers. But I like the format, and I think he's doing a really good job with it, as are you.
Well, thank you so much. I take that as high praise. But Robbie, it was Robbie's idea. Yeah. And Robbie is a compelling guy. I tell the story real quick that I worked with Terry Runnels on her podcast, and she booked Robbie E. as a guest. And I'm just like, I have nothing for him. I don't know what we're going to do. And he was just so great. Is so entertaining and engaging, and he called me maybe a couple weeks later and pitched the idea of Why It Ended. I said, you know, and yeah, it was his idea, and I went to the guy I talked to about stuff like this, and that was Mr. Conrad Thompson. And Conrad, in his language that he uses, said, "Yes, do it. It's a great idea."
All right, very good. Well, let's go to the mailbag, and we'll begin. A lot of good ones here, but let's go with a little counter to what I was saying earlier in the show. Tim from Cleveland said, "I'm guessing I might be in the minority, but I actually found myself liking Roman Reigns this week. He seemed more relaxed, and the booking is finally making me want to cheer him on." Vince McMahon is so happy to hear this. "I'm turning into a 10-year-old child by some magical power, or is WWE actually getting their wish?" So, you know, I got to say, I think the best thing Roman Reigns is doing is punching Baron Corbin before he leaves the room. It's a 10-year-old thing to do. You know, just pop somebody before you walk out of a room. Or, yeah, I don't know, it's a Three Stooges type of thing to do, too. But I don't know. Baron Corbin's a good foil, and I think Roman is doing it well. What are you liking? And I know you've said, it's kind of the writing, and Roman's not a difficult guy to deal with. What is Roman doing best right now, Matt?
I guess Roman's... that's wow.
It was not a loaded question. Right. It was sincere.
I guess I would say Roman is best when he's in the ring, you know, showing intensity, showing fire, you know, impressing us with, you know, his speed and his agility, you know. I mean, really outside the ring, there's nothing that's going great, but Roman can bring it in the ring, and Roman can get the fans on his side with his work in the ring sometimes, but that's about it, and that's even a stretch.
All right, let's move on to this email also about Roman. Ray from Wisconsin. "I'm 30 minutes into Raw, and I have so many questions, but I'll keep it to two. If Roman Reigns can't beat Baron Corbin convincingly, how am I supposed to think that a win over Brock Lesnar is anything other than a fluke? Am I wrong in thinking Roman should have beat Corbin in about 30 seconds here? Superman punch, spear, pin, and the crowd pops out of nowhere." Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair comment to make. Matt, they wanted to fill a lot of TV time, and they did. They gave Corbin's, you know, a win over Finn Balor. They tried to build up his credibility so the win would mean something. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that Corbin's been built up where going that long before you can beat him, nearly 20 minutes, is a momentum builder from an image standpoint for Roman Reigns headed into a match against Lesnar.
Well, Yeah, first of all, I just want to say that I've never looked forward to a match less than I looked forward to the Baron Corbin Roman Reigns match.
Wow.
There's nothing less intriguing than that to me. But I didn't even think about it. I was so, you know, engaged in the thought process of why are they doing this that I didn't think that should be the finish. But that makes perfect sense. It works for the way they want to present Finn Balor, who was described as a little Irishman tonight. By Corey Graves, it makes Corbin look a little weaker, and at the same time, you know, feeds into the Roman, what they're trying to do with Roman right now. And I think it would have gotten a pop. I think it would have been a really great idea to do it like that.
Well, Ray, as he goes, does Steve Austin get over if he's spending 20 minutes getting his butt kicked by Val Venus on Raw before hitting a stunner out of nowhere? Does Hulk Hogan run wild with 50-50 matches with Iron Mike Sharp on Saturday mornings? Thanks. Love the show. Hey, Ray, first of all, thank you for the question. But that actually, I think, is just one. Well, it's one topic, but maybe three questions. So I was going to say that's only one question, but really he did sort of ask three because he asked about Austin, Hogan, and Roman. But who's keeping track? But he's got a great point. I mean, we're in a different TV era, though. You know, that's the thing. I mean, you're filling 3 hours, 10 minutes of programming time on Mondays. And that's a different situation than Hulk Hogan faced, and in a way different than Steve Austin faced. I mean, Steve's much closer. They put Steve on TV a lot. Going 20 minutes with Val Venus, I don't know. I guess I'll counter that and say Steve Austin got over doing 20-minute back-and-forth matches with Savio Vega because Steve was that damn good. So, that is how Steve Austin got over, and that's what made him so damn special compared to Roman Reigns, where it takes a lot more effort.
But Roman is more of a John Cena, Hulk Hogan, you know, than, you know, CM Punk, Steve Austin, where their ring work really took him to that point, you know. And I don't think filling up time should really be an issue. They have the wrestlers to do it. You know, they have the biggest roster and the most talented roster they've ever had. I don't think anything's hurt by giving Roman a 5-minute segment instead of, you know, that 25-minute aberration of wrestling that we were subjected to.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Tom from Winchester. I'm a lifelong wrestling fan, and so far tonight I've watched more of other channels than Raw. Maybe at my age, 36, I've seen too much, too good wrestling to know when what I'm seeing isn't entertaining. None of the matches felt like something I needed to see or have a rooting interest in. We're halfway through the show, and it all felt inconsequential. Roman against Corbin, a boring babyface versus a non-threatening, non-believable heel. Bobby Roode, who should be a heel, versus... we'll see where he is in 3 months, but I'm optimistic. Mojo Raleigh. And then Akam versus Titus. This week I rewatched the Go Home Raw for SummerSlam in August of 97. And except for the Truth Commission segment, I enjoyed the show from start to finish. It was much more engaging end to end. Watching this, I find myself saying, what else is on? Way too often, and football hasn't even started yet. Compared to SmackDown last week, even though it had much less in-ring product, I felt like every segment was significant and progressed something. Am I being a jaded wrestling fan, or is Raw as bland as I feel it is? So that's Tom in Winchester venting a little bit. Matt, where do you rate what Vince McMahon is doing with Raw in terms of the booking and the depth of star power that they can put on TV for 5 minutes, like Alexa Bliss in her promo segment, or 30 minutes in the ring for in-ring segments and all that? Like, where are they on that kind of scale? Are they kind of in the middle zone, or do you think they're kind of on the low side? Because I was thinking, watching Raw tonight, where would they be? And who would be getting this TV time if not for Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns? Like, if not, you know, you're talking about they got a lot of good wrestlers. Who would be filling TV time from a star power standpoint at this point? I guess they just would have hired other people or promoted other people and filled out the roster that way, and maybe we'd be better off. I think Tom probably would feel that way.
You know, I definitely agree. I can't say offhand who should get more time, but, you know, I could say that Drew Galloway could get more time as a single. You know, I could say that tag match could have actually happened. You know, there's a lot of great wrestlers that just need the right, you know, I hate to say gimmick, but the right gimmick and the right narrative to get to the top. I'm sure of it. And it's almost like, you know, Seth is this interchangeable upper tier, almost headliner, where there's a few guys, I think, below him that could fill in that slot. You know, but to answer the email writer's question, is he a jaded wrestling fan? Well, you know, it goes with the territory of just getting older. You know, I'm, you know, in my 40s, so the best basketball I've ever seen in my life was the Celtics versus Lakers. You can never change my mind, but every single person my age feels the same way. And it's that way with music. It's that way with wrestling. You know, it's never going to be as great as it once was.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say they're using all the talent on the Raw roster to their maximum. I mean, the Revival and the B Team are getting television time. I don't think, with all due respect to everybody on the undercard there, Slater, Rhino, Ascension, Mike Kanellis. I mean, there's not like nobody jumps out who was at the building but not on the show where you're like, well, that would have made the show a lot better. They're missing Jason Jordan, Kane, Big Show, you know, certain people who are, you know, I mean, Chad Gable certainly could be utilized better. Tyler Breeze got a little cameo. But they used basically all, I mean, they used all the top guys, heels and faces, and they did a tag team segment with three different tag teams. So, I mean, this was a Raw that took advantage, so to speak, of everybody they had access to. This was not, there weren't a lot of people who didn't get minutes off the bench who would have made the show better. This is what Raw is now, and I just think it's kind of middle of the road in star power. I've seen eras where I felt there was less, and I've definitely seen eras where I think they had more hot acts, but, I mean, Kevin Owens doing his thing is entertaining. He's good at what he does. What did you think of the latest Braun Strowman stunt? I mean, is there somebody on staff whose job, and this isn't passing judgment good or bad, I'm just like, it seems like there's somebody whose job is just to come up with another way for Braun to do a stunt that we hadn't thought of previously.
Oh, they're just all sitting around the room and they're just pitching these crazy ideas at Vince because he loves them. You know, he's like, what if we lift up a whole barricade, or what if we did this? I hate those. That's what keeps me from really being a Braun Strowman guy, is the fact that they keep going to these things. The last time I was on your show, he pushed a porta potty for approximately 200 yards, you know? And to me, it's reached the point where let's do it in the ring. Let's use that charisma in the ring. I don't think this helps him. I think it feels very much like a time filler. And I think fans are getting kind of hip to that.
Yep. By the way, Chris, our outside correspondent whose phone dropped off, did say, because he was prepared, the two things he'll remember from this Raw, 6, 9, 18 months from now, is Braun Strowman tipping the stage over and seeing Ronda Rousey's first match on Raw. So speaking of Braun Strowman, that's one of the things he'll remember in the rearview mirror when he looks back on this experience.
I was shocked, Wade, that something happened with that platform, since they did a show not in the ring for the first time since Piper's Pit.
And not on the stage. I mean,
right.
Yeah, it was like, it's so WWE, you know, to debut something that you've never seen before. And I like that spot for the Kevin Owens show, but when you see what happened and why they set it up there in retrospect, it's so corny. I mean, it's like, Think about, like, do 3-4 weeks of the Kevin Owens show in that spot, explain why it's there, have it make sense, and then have Braun, you know, hide under, knock it over from behind. So.
Right. It's just lazy.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Stephanie says, first time emailer, long time listener. Well, excellent. Hands down, Paul Heyman is the greatest. But what was the point of his promo tonight on Raw? I mean, he was crying and heartbroken about his relationship with Brock crumbling, yet predicts Brock's going to retain? Why, Wade? Why? Thank you for reading my email. And as always, everyone, go VIP. Thank you, Stephanie. So, Matt, what's your take on what the point was of the Paul Heyman segment?
You know, the point was to people like Heyman, I guess, and the point is to sympathize with him and hate Brock and love Roman. But this isn't the first time we've seen Paul Heyman do this exact thing. He did the same thing with CM Punk, you know, where he grew out his beard and you know, had the 4 o'clock shadow and was wondering why he didn't love him anymore and still believed in him. And, you know, it's definitely a callback to that. I think it does set up a turn, maybe, you know, and maybe moves Roman into the championship role with Lesnar moving on against Angle, with Heyman doing something else. It's definitely purposeful for the purpose of showing some depth to Heyman's character or the big swerve.
All right, let's do another email here from Philip from D.C. I won't harp on Coach saying that Jeff Hardy was U.S. champ defending against Shinsuke at SummerSlam. The Paul Heyman segment tonight was one of the best segments of Raw in a while, in my opinion. Following up on what Renee asked, do you see Heyman advocating for anyone else? Excluding Roman, is there anyone else on the main roster that it would make sense for Heyman to pair up with? I was thinking maybe AOP might make sense because they could use a mouthpiece, but they seem too much of a downgrade from Brock for us to believe Heyman would manage them. Your thoughts?
You know, you have to be careful if you do this, because what it's done in the past is it's defined Heyman down more than it's lifted up the person he's working with. If you're really talking about who could benefit and where would be the perfect combination, Shinsuke Nakamura. You know, Shinsuke Nakamura would be the guy that I would pick and would make the most sense and would benefit the most, and they would make the most money with if Heyman was paired with him.
I'm trying to, like, Ronda Rousey was one of my, like, I thought, man, Ronda, but I've made the pitch on the Keller Hotline now for Shayna Baszler. Like, if Heyman got a faction together and he became kind of the Bobby Heenan to Hogan, he became to Ronda Rousey, where, and maybe just, you know, it's more than just Shayna Baszler. Maybe it's male wrestlers too, and I don't mind at all the AOP example option also. And Shinsuke is a good option too. I mean, he could put a hell of a faction together. I don't know if he has it in him at this stage. When I say have it in him, he could do it. But if that's what he wants to do, where it's like be on the road every week again and be trying to get new people over, maybe that creative drive is there, but maybe he's kind of over it and this is his grand finale. I don't have a sense of that.
Yeah, I think you never know with him. He always appears to have so much going on off, you know, camera and out of the WWE. But he's, you know, he's writing segments now. So he's more involved than we probably know. And my feeling is he likes being in front of the camera.
I hope so. I like when he is. All right, Raymond from Cleveland. While I'm watching Raw tonight, I could not help but to think of you while watching this Elias segment. I know you're a firm advocate of Elias losing his catchphrases and not playing for the crowd cheers. I know this one email will not change your mind, but I disagree with you. I see no issues with heels having participative catchphrases that elicit a good crowd reaction. I think the audience's intelligence is taken for granted, and I think that it was displayed tonight. While I love Elias's catchphrases and have a good laugh at his jokes, I still understand that he is a heel and will boo him when it comes down to it. Although he may make me laugh and has a great crowd chant, he does what he needs to do in order to be an effective heel, and the crowd always boos him when appropriate. I get why you want him to drop the Walk with Elias shtick, but I think too much energy is focused on that instead of just enjoying the ride. Am I the only one who feels this way? Well, you're not the only one who feels this way, because Elias or the people who produce him and Vince McMahon obviously agree. They like the audience participation, and they don't see a downside to fans enthusiastically saying, Walk with Elias! Well, then he goes on to troll them, and they, oh, how dare you say that about our city, and we didn't see that coming. My issue with it isn't that it's not, you can't enjoy the ride, but the reaction of, oh, it's just wrestling, just enjoy it, is never a good, to me, that's not a sufficient answer when I think something is being done that undercuts, I'll say it, the narrative structure of the show. And I think when what you're trying to do is get people invested, ultimately, in the end, it all comes down to this, a match where you want to see somebody win and you want to see somebody lose. When you chip away at that by letting fans not really consistently dislike somebody, but have fun going along for the ride. It's fun to chant with Elias. It's fun to cheer certain aspects of his act, but then boo when he gets mean. You're not getting people at that to get invested in the product at a really deep, fully invested level. And so I think you're chipping away at something that's really vital. And when you do that, it makes everything else more difficult when you're trying to sell people on other intense, legit heel acts and trying to get people to be consistently invested in them.
Well, I think, Wade, that with Elias, I think he can keep doing this if he wants to stay where he is on the card. You know, this is not – if you don't get people invested in someone beating him or him losing, which I don't think you can do with the sing-along chants or the talk-along chants, I don't think he's going to go to that next level. You need to have people wanting him to win or wanting him to lose. You can't have people halfway. And if you do, you know, he's going to be pretty good in that lower mid-card for a while.
What do you think about my contention that when you're conditioning an audience to not take things seriously, that it works against you once you get past that spot you just talked about Elias being in?
Oh, I totally agree. I think that that's what does it, because you have to have emotional investment. You know, we like to have that, you know, suspension of disbelief, and we want to get invested in our heroes and our villains like we do in the movies. And you can't, you know, you can't hate a villain or dislike a villain in a movie when you like some of their lines that they say. You know, that turns them into a cool heel, yeah, which is what Elias is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I get people going, oh, it's fun. I went there because I wanted to do it. And that's not the lens through which I judge whether a wrestling show is successful, is whether people had fun being sports entertained. Like, to me, I judge it based on did this yes, entertain the audience, but in the way that I think pro wrestling reaches its peak entertainment level, which is when it's getting people really invested in believing that they should dislike the heels, like the baby faces. They need to be cast correctly, framed, and presented correctly. All that is are important ingredients. But when you kind of mess around with it just for the fun of it, I think you start losing you start losing something that's really valuable.
And it's definitely reflected in the lack of heat he gets when he does, you know, heelish bad guy things. You know, there's never been, you know, and when he hits guys with a guitar, there's never been this emotional moment for fans with like, oh, that guy's terrible. It hasn't happened.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's go to, Kermit, who says, loving VIP, great cost for what you get. I tweeted you earlier, sorry for the redundancy, but I'm wondering if it was confirmed if the crowd was yelling, we want Roman and not we want Strowman, since he has the Money in the Bank contract. It does seem like Roman is getting over week after week. Personally, I can't wait till they rip the Band-Aid off and put the title on Roman already. There is, I think, just going to be a relief. Like, I wonder if some people will cheer who don't even like Roman, just like, yay, we're just finally to the stage. Let's just get past Roman being the Universal Champion so we can move on to a new story.
Yeah, I you might as well, you know, you might. I mean, the it makes a great point, because really, where would we be now if Roman got the title at the Greatest Royal Rumble or WrestleMania? We'd probably be in a better place than we are now, delaying it if it in fact happens. So if you're going to do it, just do it.
Yeah. All right. Dwight says these Braun Strowman segments are getting tired. Lifting and outrunning guys. How long can this go on? Thanks. Love your podcast. How do you grade Matt Strowman's the way that he's being framed? Like, is this a narrow lane that kind of pigeonholes him as kind of a gimmicky baby face, but not a main guy? Or is this a holding pattern for when they finally get to something that's more intense and more centrally focused? Like, you know, the stunts are fun. Outracing guys is fun. There's a novelty to it. Is it long-term sustainable? And is it the best way to frame him right now?
Well, I'm willing to accept the fact that I don't get Braun Strowman and other people do, and that maybe I'm missing something with him. But like I said, I think the stunts are tired. I love the running. I love the idea that you can't run away from this guy. And I think there's an intangible that people are kind of grasping on. And, you know, I think the WWE is bound and determined to keep doing these stunts until he, you know, topples an entire building. I don't think I think it does limit his choices as to what he can do afterwards, though.
Yep. Yep. All right. Ray from Wisconsin. Before the Riot Squad match, Michael Cole literally said, the Riot Squad has been dominating as of late. Thanks to beauty of the internet, I confirm that Liv Morgan has, in fact, eaten a pin 4 weeks in a row and 8 of the past 10 shows. How exactly does that count as dominating? I mean, you kind of want announcers to have credibility, and you don't want fans like just shaking their heads like, oh, it's a con. They're you know, Cole's lying to me, or he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's sort of a small thing, but in a way, it's part of building credibility with a fan so that they believe their announcers have credibility. I just think lead announcing, lead play-by-play guys are so important.
It's a symptom, you know, it's a small thing, but it's a symptom of the bigger issue we talk about sometimes, about the lack of continuity, the lack of caring, the lack of work. You know, it would be a very simple thing to say, they've been on a losing streak, but Ruby Riott now has returned, so their fortune is going to change. We'll do, you know, a series of possibilities through that, but instead they went lazy and easy, and it hurts them long term, and it doesn't do any favors for the wrestlers.
All right, Paul L says, please WWE get Bobby Lashley a mouthpiece. His promos are just boring. Sadly, I've tried to like him, but he just bores me. He's got a couple other points, but where are you Matt on Bobby Lashley? I have to admit, I thought he was kind of boring tonight. They were trying, he was trying. Boring's kind of the word. I don't know that it worked for me.
If I'm being honest, I did not think of his name or his face or him at all until he was just brought up.
Yeah.
Which I think says a lot about him. I think he's the same guy he was when he left. I think a lot of the talk of him being this great heel in TNA is overblown. I think his only saving grace to be that top guy that Vince wants him to be would be, you know, placing him with a Paul Heyman. But, you know, Paul Heyman's that guy for a lot of people. where I am with Bobby Lashley is it's not good, and it's not going to a great place, and it's Batista-ish in its in its bombing in my eyes. It's just taking a little bit longer.
We talk about announcing at the end of the Elias Lashley segment. Cole said, this is embarrassing for Elias, after Lashley instructed Elias's own documentary camera crew to film him in the, being laid out in the ring after his delayed drop vertical suplex. So Cole goes, this is embarrassing for Elias. And then Coach said, that will never see the light of day. And now, Coach, you're live on USA Network. You're like, it just got broadcast. I mean, I get what he was saying, but like, it's USA Network, Coach. Like, everybody just saw it. There's nothing Elias can do about this. It's anyway, that was just a little small thing. What was it when, after we're talking about the Riot Squad too, when Ruby Riot attacked Sasha and Bayley, Coach said, how good is it to see the leader of the Riot Squad come out to help her girls? Well, first of all, Coach, I don't know if you should be calling them girls. Like, they're, it's just, that's a little Mad Men-esque. And especially from him and the way he carries himself. But a larger point here is, why you're taking the heat away from Ruby Riot. The whole point of what Ruby did is to get heel heat, so fans are angry at her and the Riot Squad for her and the Riot Squad for beating up Sasha and Bayley like that. And it's like, I'm just, and again, this falls to Vince, the absolute just structural fundamentals of what I didn't think anybody would ever screw up who was in a position of promoting wrestling are not there sometimes. Like, how do you have an announcer like Coach, who is not a straight up heel announcer, where you would expect it out of him, totally extinguishing the heel heat that everything about that segment was meant to set up? It doesn't matter. Making all this money off TV and people watch and they're quote entertained, and I get all the excuses for it. It doesn't change the fact that it makes no freaking sense for Coach to say that, and I don't get how that comes out of his mouth, whether he's fed the line or he comes up with it himself. Either way, I'm just dumbfounded. Matt, help me.
It makes you wonder whether there's not any feedback given afterwards or beforehand about, you know, the undercard stuff. You know, I think there's so little emphasis on it. If they cared at all about the Bayley Sasha thing at this point, then that's not something that would be done. Because look at the kid gloves they use with Brock to protect Roman. I'm dumbfounded as well. Coach seems to go rogue sometimes and say things, Mike Adamly-ish. And I think this was a moment of that where it made no sense. And I'd like to think maybe Vince chewed him out for that.
Paul L. also says, if KO gets the briefcase, no matter how Braun loses, why can't he convince Jinder or his Singh brother to hit him right after the bell rings at SummerSlam? Instant DQ for the KO. And then Braun can destroy him after that. KO would just be more entertaining with it than Braun. We talked about, Braun and the stunt. We didn't talk really about what they're doing. Again, it's a little heavy-handed. You know, what are the odds of these finishes happening a couple weeks in a row that are perfectly illustrative of what might happen at SummerSlam? So, again, it feels a little convenient, kind of like the stage being, Braun taking advantage of the KO set being off stage. But nevertheless, they're underlining and emphasizing this is how easily this can happen. Is Owens just going to seem like a complete... If Owens doesn't end up with Money in the Bank briefcase, he'll seem like a fool. I mean, it's so easy to get it to happen unless they come up with some really clever way to have Braun outsmart KO. Matt, what do you think of that? And do you just assume now KO's going to end up with a briefcase?
No, I don't assume he's going to end up with a briefcase. I think this is all about Braun Strowman and telling the story of Braun Strowman and him cashing in at some point and maybe SummerSlam. You talk about Roman and how much is Roman responsible for as far as his performance. Kevin Owens is a guy who can rise above almost any situation. I think this is such a bad angle for him. It is just terrible in so many ways and damaging to him. But he limits that damage by being so fantastic at what he does. I think he's someone who is being wasted right now and could be spotlighted in a much bigger way. And it doesn't do much favors for Braun except to, prepare him for his Money in the Bank cash, and I don't think Owens beats him for it.
And Paul has one more comment. Is that guy opposite the hard camera the only guy who actually bought a Baron Corbin t-shirt? Yes, I can report definitively that he is the only one.
Yeah, I think his family's in town.
Harry R. says, I enjoyed the main event, but I think that Alicia Fox tapping immediately, which I think is okay, but with Ronda not even extending her arm, is something I don't think is okay unless the announcers sell it with a, she was afraid to get her arm snapped. Am I being too picky? Thanks for the great work, Wade and Matt. I am not somebody, and I know there's people who have a different view, who want what happens in the pro wrestling ring, with MMA people especially, to look like a properly applied MMA move. And if you can do it, great. I don't get hung up on that. Maybe I should be more concerned about it. I know it drives people nuts that Ronda's offense doesn't look better. I think if you start going down the road of wanting what people who were in MMA doing in the ring, if you want it to look good, you can go down a road pretty quickly, and they can't do anything that they do in the ring. So is it better if the armbar looks really similar? Yeah. If it might lead to injury, no. Even if they don't do it well, is it undercutting a lot of what's happening? I don't think as much as the people who are really vitriolic about it believe. But Matt, I think ultimately, as good as the judo throws look, you also want the armbar to look good. And if it doesn't and Alicia's arm is still bent, Ronda shouldn't be extending her arm to make a point. But I think the announcers do have to kind of cover for it and go, man, you know, like Corey Graves could just go, man, Alicia Fox tapped before that got extended. She knew that a broken arm was in store for her if she didn't. I like Harry's suggestion of the announcers covering for it.
Well, for me, I think Ronda's frightening enough. You know, I don't think you need to have her really simulate the move. It was such a fast flurry of action, and her shoulder was bent in a way that I felt it was a realistic tap out. And I think even if she doesn't do the perfect armbar, the way that she sets it up with those just frightening looking judo throws and whatever those moves are called, she does. I think she can just, you know, do what she did tonight and get believable wins all the time. The fans bought into it. That's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Matt, great conversation. Thank you again for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me, Wade. I always think I talk too much, but I always love talking to you, and I'm always excited to do it.
And you don't talk too much, and I'm always glad when you're on, and I appreciate it, and we will talk to you not too far down the road, I hope.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me, Wade.
You bet. Thank you. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be by tomorrow with the post-SmackDown show. Travis Bryant from the PW Torch East Coast cast joining me for the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show after tomorrow night's SmackDown. And then the flagship this week over on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our blue logo, will feature Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. And then Friday, on Interview Friday, it's the Tony Schiavone interview, part two. If you missed part one, go check it out. It's over on the blue logo, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now available more places than ever, including Spreaker, Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podbay FM, and more. So check it out, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and of course, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Beyond Pod and Downcast and Dogcatcher, any podcast app you use or whatever podcast distributor you listen to. We're very likely there, expanding to more places than ever. Just search Wade Keller, or you can find our show at WadeKellerPodcast.com. All right, thanks everybody. Until tomorrow, Wade Keller reminding you, go VIP, PWTorchVIPInfo.com, PWTorchVIPInfo.com. And if you want to be an on-site correspondent or you have questions or comments about SmackDown or for the flagship with Jason, that email address for this show is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you attend a live wrestling event, we were short on those this past weekend. We wish we got more. If you attend a live pro wrestling event, please send us results. Please send us a report for our website. The email address is pwtorch@pwtorch.com. That goes for news tips also. Something wrestling related crosses your screen or the radio waves or the TV screen in your area, let us know. We might not know about it, and we can pass it along to our readers and listeners. That is pwtorch@pwtorch.com. Check out the PW Torch livecast lineup, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, Conor McGregor News, the UFC pay-per-view from this past Saturday, so much more. Sean Ennis hosting again this week. Hope you'll check that out. It's part of the PW Torch livecast lineup. Then the ROH theme show drops later today. The NXT show drops late Wednesday night. The Impact show drops late Thursday night. Check out the PW Torch livecast lineup. So just search PW Torch wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. It's free. 7 shows every week. 1 new show every day on a wide array of themes and topics. PWTorchLivecast.com or search PW Torch. And finally, be sure to check out PWPodcasts.com. That's pwpodcast.com for written recaps, summaries, and analysis of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. That's pwpodcasts.com. Follow me on social media at The Wade Keller on Twitter, and follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. Follow our brand on Instagram at PW Torch. Like our brand on Facebook at facebook.com/PW Torch, and friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/Wade Keller Torch. Thanks, everybody, and until tomorrow, on behalf of Matt Kuhn, all our callers, all the emailers, and our on-site correspondent, this is Wade Keller thanking you for joining us today and signing off. Please keep us in mind when you're about to shop at Amazon. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Click on the Amazon logo on that page, and it takes you right to the Amazon homepage. But that two-second detour by starting at pwtorch.com/Amazon means we get a commission on whatever you buy on that shopping trip. So every single time you're going to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support.